This is a download from the BBC. For more information and our terms of use, go to bbc.co.uk/radio3.
The year 1913 did not begin well for Marcel Proust. His long novel had been turned down by two publishers the previous autumn, and in February it was refused by a third. One of the publishers had at least read the novel rather than merely pretending to, but that can't have been much comfort to the author. The year didn't end well either, at least as far as Proust's emotional life went. The young man he was desperately in love with ran away in December, and by March of the following year the young man was dead, the plane he was flying having crashed into the sea close to Antibes. Meanwhile, however, Proust did manage to publish, at his own expense, the first volume of his novel, which had come to be called Du Côté de chez Swann, usually known in English as Swann's Way, but also translated, correctly if rather awkwardly, as The Way by Swans, or The Way by Swann's Place. He had many favourable reviews, but they were all by his friends, and one of them went a little far, even by the standards of friendship, comparing Proust not only to Dostoevsky and Shakespeare, but also to Pascal, Shelley, Goethe, Plato and Leonardo da Vinci. Still, the book did sell rather well, and the reputation Proust was to gain began to form. He was no longer now just the rich socialite so many people knew. He was almost Marcel Proust, that is, the author of one of the greatest and longest novels of the 20th century, whose standing in world literature is still growing even now. But the big event of the year 1913 in Proust's writing life occurred sometime in April of that year, and in a rather strange place. On a galley proof. Proust habitually made additions and adjustments as he corrected proofs, and sometimes indeed seemed to be writing a whole new book in the margins. But this event of 1913, was not really an addition or an adjustment. It was the invention of a new character, a composer, who brought vast new discussions of music and art into the novel. This man, called Vinteuil, is usually taken to be some kind of mixture of César Franck, Saint-Saëns and Debussy. But he is really, as becomes a character in fiction, much odder and more emblematic than any of them. In the typescripts from which the galleys were made, there was no such person. There was a composer called Berger, whose name, with a different ending, came to belong to the writer, Bergotte. There was a naturalist called Vinton, whose fictional existence was justified by his having a lesbian daughter. But Proust did more than combine these two identities. He created a portrait of the artist as an old fool, une vieille bête, as he said, as an old fool and a great artist, but in that order. Here is what he said in a letter to a friend. "We often say of a great artist," Proust wrote, "that apart from his genius, he was an old fool who had the narrowest ideas. But since we have the idea of his genius in our minds, we don't think of him as narrow and ridiculous in reality. So I found it more striking to show Vinteuil first as an old fool, without letting anyone suspect that he was a genius, and in the second chapter to speak of his sublime sonata, which Swann," this is the character who is listening to the sonata, "which Swann does not think for a second of ascribing to the old fool." There is more than an elementary irony in Proust's writing here, and there is more than the sadness of obscurity or misrecognition. There is something like a parable about art and its dramatic separation from life. In a much earlier draft of his novel, Proust had declared that real writing, the writing that matters, is done by a secret self who has nothing to do with the social self who goes out and has dinner, or could have a biography written about him or her. But of course, that secret self still belongs to someone. In the completed novel, we first meet the composer Vinteuil as a neighbour of the narrator's relatives in the country. The gentleman is known for his strictness about manners and dress and so on, so that the boy's mother takes special care with his outfit if they are likely to see him at church. Vinteuil used to be a piano teacher, but since the death of his wife and his coming into a bit of money, he lives at his leisure with his daughter. He won't visit the narrator's relatives anymore because he may see Charles Swann there, and Vinteuil disapproves of Swann's marriage, which he calls, quote, "inappropriate, as is the fashion these days." Still, the narrator's family can go and see him if they like to, and they do. They have heard a rumour that he composes music, and they ask him to play something of his own work. He would love to do this, and has actually put some sheet music on the piano in order to encourage just such an invitation, but he is finally too modest to carry out this gross subterfuge. He shyly refuses to play, and he keeps fussily pretending to wonder who could possibly have put the music on the piano. In any case, no one suspects his compositions are anything more than a light and frivolous hobby. The fastidious, respectable Vinteuil is deeply bothered by what he knows of the sexual orientation of his daughter. He would probably have been bothered by her having any sexual orientation at all, let alone lesbian. And here is what Proust has to say about this unfortunate man tangled in his love and his prejudices. "It did not follow," Proust writes, "from the fact that Monsieur Vinteuil perhaps knew of his daughter's behaviour, that his adoration of her was diminished by his knowledge. Facts do not penetrate the world where our beliefs live. They did not create them. They do not destroy them. But when he thought of his daughter and himself from the point of view of the world, from the point of view of his and her reputation, his social judgment was the same as that of the inhabitant of Cambrai who might be the most hostile to him, and he saw himself and his daughter in the lowest of the lower depths." Vinteuil dies while the narrator is still a child, and it is in a long inset story about events that take place before the narrator's birth that he first recounts a performance of a piece by Vinteuil, a sonata for violin and piano performed at an artistic soiree where Swann is there with other guests. In this time frame, Vinteuil is widely regarded as the greatest contemporary composer, but no one knows anything much about his private life. Swann, bowled over by the music when he hears it, says he knows someone called Vinteuil, a piano teacher. "Perhaps that's him," Swann's hostess says. Swann laughs. "Oh no," he says. "If you'd seen him for 2 minutes, you wouldn't ask the question." The boring Vinteuil in the country who is his acquaintance could be a relative of the great man, Swann supposes, and he thinks it might even be worthwhile putting up with the old fool for a bit if he would actually introduce him to the composer. It's wonderful to think of Proust inventing this intricate little story on the galley proofs of his novel when he was supposed to be taking care of typos and similar small errors. And one of his letters of this year all but allows us to see the act of invention taking place. "Great emotion this evening," Proust wrote to his correspondent. "I was feeling almost dead, but went to a concert hall in the Rue du Rocher to hear the Franck Sonata, which I love so much. Not to hear Enesco." This was Georges Enesco, the violinist who was playing the piece. "Not to hear Enesco," Proust said, "whom I had never heard. Well, I found him admirable." Franck had died in 1890, and Proust had heard the piece many times, often performed in what was for him too predictable a fashion, too angelic, he said. In his letter, he goes on to describe this particular performance in vivid language and imagery that found its way into his novel. But this is the least of it. "We surely have to imagine him, picturing the composer as he is refigured and revived by this particular performer, and also contemplating the separation of the work of art from the now forgotten or vanished life of the composer." Proust spoke repeatedly at this time of his wish to reach the reader he didn't know, some friend of my thinking who would not otherwise have encountered it. And he certainly understood that if he couldn't know this reader at all, the reader couldn't know him except through his work. And at this point we realise, or if we had forgotten, we remember, that Proust is a great comic novelist as well as the master depictor of desperate love and lost and regained memory. The comedy here is all a matter of timing, a question of who possesses which pieces of knowledge and who lacks them. To combine the great composer and the overly respectable father of the lesbian woman is not to suggest any sort of source for the music. Indeed, the chronology of the story implies that Vinteuil composed his works before he had a daughter. But it is to provide the reader with precisely the information that Charles Swann, the character, lacks. And if the reader knows that the old fool and the artist are not just related to each other, not just linked by a common name, but are indeed the same person, the reader also knows much more. The reader has a sense of Vinteuil's personal suffering, of his internal conflicts and affected life, that Swann will never have. Indeed, the reader has a sense of Vinteuil's life of the kind that only readers of novels have of other people. Vinteuil's troubles and complications may have nothing to do with his music, but they are as real as his music. And this perception is part of Proust's delicate, sad comedy. He is himself Vinteuil in this story, both present sufferer and future revered artist, both humiliated buffoon and the master of the comedy. This double role means that Proust must part company with aesthetes like Wilde and Pater, who influenced him so much. Since he is finally proposing that art is always rooted in life, even if that life finds no direct reflection in it. And in a very curious passage in De Courtier de chez Swann, which he must have added also in this year, 1913, he raises this question in the most haunting way. Continuing his conversation about the still misrecognized Vinteuil at the soirée, Swann learns that the composer is not well, and indeed is threatened with mental illness. One of Swann's fellow guests at the soirée suggests that touches of this incipient madness can be found in certain passages of the sonata itself. Swann finds this idea very disturbing. Proust writes, "Swann did not find this remark absurd, but it troubled him. For a work of pure music has nothing of the logical structure whose disturbance in language indicates madness, so that madness recognized in a sonata seemed to him as mysterious as the madness of a dog or a horse, which nevertheless does exist." We might say that music has formal structures and rules equivalent to logic in language, and that we could therefore recognize the disorder of madness in either case. But this obvious insanity is not what Swann is thinking about, and it is not what is troubling him. His question, and Proust's, is whether a mental condition exterior to a work can leave a less obvious trace in it, and what such a trace would look like. Proust's answer, I think, is that such traces should not exist in theory, but in practice are likely to hover interestingly in any work of lasting importance. What Proust is doing here is inventing what later became known as the death of the author. The praise was that of Roland Barthes. It appeared in an essay of 1980, and it formalized the idea that the text was completely separate from anything to do with the author's life and should be read independently of it, something that the American New Critics in the 1950s had also urged on us. What Proust is doing is simultaneously inventing this theory in which he resolutely believed and complicating the theory at the same time, because there is a piece of him that doesn't entirely believe in it. So Proust's theory and his rebuttal of that same theory can be traced to the music that Proust heard in 1913. He heard quite a bit of music that year, Beethoven quartets as well as the Franck Sonata. He attended the Ballet Russe. He went to the first night of Mussorgsky's Boris Godunov and to the first night of Stravinsky's Rite of Spring. But surely, no sound he heard could compete with the silent performance on those galley proofs, the parable of the fussy old fool and the creative genius who turn out to be the same person.
Tonight's essay was presented by Professor Michael G. Wood and produced in Bristol by Sarah Davies. Tomorrow night at the